Prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did ya? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow, now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host A. Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk, and welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast, bringing you big-time interviews with some of the biggest names in rock music each and every week. And as I tell you each and every week, the interviews you hear on this podcast all originated on my SiriusXM radio show. They happen live on Trunk Nation. You can hear that Monday through Friday, Faction Talk, SiriusXM channel 103, live 3 to 5 Eastern or noon to 2 Pacific. Do the time conversion in whatever time zone you're in. And join me each and every weekday for rock news, talk, phone calls, and a whole lot more. Here on the podcast, we bring you a little sampling of what I do every day on the radio. This week, two big interviews. We'll start with Lenny Kravitz. It was great to visit with Lenny. He's been on the show a few times. He's a big rock fan. He's got a brand new record coming out. We spent some time with him. And second in the podcast, Chris Jericho, an old friend, best known in the wrestling world, of course, but a massive music fan, massive rock fan, massive Kiss fan. And we talk about the latest release from his band Quarantine and a whole lot more. But let's get it started with the multi-talented Lenny Kravitz, who visited me in the SiriusXM studios in New York City a few weeks ago. Here's that conversation on the Eddie Trunk podcast. Lenny, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, Mr. Eddie Trunk.
All good on you. We were just talking for a second before we got on the air. I got to hit you with this real quick because you were telling me that you went to the Sphere in Vegas, where I have a second home, and you went to see U2. And I'm just curious because you've always been a guy that's big into visuals as well, presenting your music and all of that. I'm curious what your take was on seeing a show at the Sphere and if it got your gears turning about some stuff you might be able to do in there.
Absolutely. It's we're here. We're in the future. We're living in the future. And this is such a great presentation and a great way to play a concert, you know? And I was blown away. I thought it was absolutely incredible. And it's endless, you know, what you can do. I'm sure everybody that comes in there is going to be completely different, you know?
Right.
But it's just a great place.
Yeah. I mean, the visuals are one thing, but the audio being all around you is just crazy. You've got a history and a friendship with the guys in U2, right?
Yeah. In fact, Bono and Edge picked TK421 as the first track to release, which I did, which I thought was interesting because I wasn't thinking of that. And
so how did that happen? Did they come to your place your studio or did you bring
they were,
it to them?
They were in the Bahamas chilling and having a little break. And we had a dinner and an evening hanging out in the studio. Played him the album, or played him most of the album that was done at that point. And both of them just said, that's the first track. Mm. And at that point, I wasn't even thinking about first tracks or what I was going to come out with, because I was still in the middle of it. But they were right. It was a good way to open things up.
Well, that's a good way to dive into the new record because, of course, you're making the rounds promoting a new record, which is coming out on May 24th, and it is Blue Electric Light. And I just got it, so I had a chance to listen through all the way one time so far. But I got to tell you, man, I love what you did on this record because what I've loved about your career so much is it's hard to put you in a box because there's elements of what you do that are funky. There's R&B elements, there's rock elements. And to me on this record, you really touched all those bases kind of equally, maybe more so than in the last couple records. Would you agree with that? Was that a mission, or did you just, that's just kind of how it came out?
No, it's whatever I'm offered, you know, I take. I'm just an antenna, so I'm picking up whatever's floating around me. And this is what came, and I love it. And it was fun. It was really, really fun to make. I had a great time. I mean, I always love the studio. I always have a great time in the studio. That's the place I love being the most. But there was just an air of, when I say fun, like youthful fun, like when you're a teenager, you know? There was just something about it that really reminded me of what I was doing pre-Let Love Rule, you know? And so that was really cool. And I think that's because I'd written that book, Let Love Rule. It came out at the beginning of the pandemic, which, you know, is about my life from birth to the first album, so about 24 years old. And I spent a lot of time exploring my teenage years, and I hadn't really thought about those times, you know, since then, really. And somehow that spirit came into the music without me even realizing it. So after the first couple of tracks that I cut, I was like, man, this reminds me of the stuff I was doing in high school. And so it went that way. So it has that spirit. It's fresh. It's today. You know, it's how I feel now, but it has that spirit from that time.
Do you find that hard to get to, like, conjure up at times? Because, I mean, this is your 12th record.
Mm-hmm.
You have been doing this for a long time. You recently turned 59, I believe. I mean, you've been in the game for a while now. When you go into the creative process to write a record, I'm sure over the 12 records, some have come easier than others. But, you know, there's that old adage, you got your whole life to write your first record, and you got to figure out how you're following it up every other record. And there's pressures as to what the previous one did. So how do you navigate? How do you process all of that?
I have no idea what I'm ever going to do, and I don't care. I just want whatever I'm supposed to have at that time. And it's always different, you know? And so I was just open like I normally am, and I just sit and I wait. I'm not the kind of musician that goes into the studio on a schedule. Some people do. I've seen people do it. It works well for them. You know, it's Monday, it's 10 o'clock, I'm gonna go in, I'm gonna work for so many hours, I'm gonna have lunch, I'm gonna go back, I'm gonna work some more, then I'm, you know. And for me, I not that I can't do it, but it doesn't feel as natural to me. So I wait until I hear something and then I begin. And as I'm working on whatever it is that I just heard, the vortex sort of just opens up, keeps opening, keeps widening, and then more information comes through. So, and it can be weird because, you know, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I want to do. And you just have to have faith that whatever's supposed to happen will happen.
Yeah, man, but as an artist, and of course I'm not a musician, I'm not a songwriter, but I would think going into stuff like that with that mentality, that totally empty palette, and I can just do whatever I want on this palette, and I'm going to put it out, this is me now, this is what I want to do. I mean, that's a really great luxury, I would think, to have as an artist, because you know some people aren't that fortunate because they're at the mercy of a, you know, a label or a manager or an agent, or I got a break, or I got to get something that's right, a direct hit with the audience, or I've got to do this because this is happening now. And one of the things I've respected about your career for so long, going back to the first record, is you never let any of that get to you. Like, Let Love Rule was very different than what was coming out at time when it came out. I worked in rock radio. I remember getting it. So to have that sort of, from the get-go, that sort of creative freedom as an artist has got to be an amazing feeling.
It is, and that was something that was very important to me, you know, that I have creative control, and I had that from the beginning. You know, that I was like, that's part of the contract. I have to be able to do what I want, produce my records, play all the instruments, do whatever it is. And it has given me the freedom until now to just be myself, not worry about trends, chasing hits. You know, for me, if you're chasing something, you're already late. So I just want to do what is mine and what is for me. And you've got bigger records, you know, smaller records, huge hits, moderate hits. You know, it's a journey. And but right now, the wave that I'm riding feels really good and steady. And I've never felt better, and I'm just ready to put this music out and hit the road.
Yeah, man, and I can relate. You know, on the same level, when I started in radio 40 years ago, the whole trip for me was, I'll never forget when I got my first gig, and they're like, "Well, here's your playlist. Here's what you're gonna play. Here's what you're gonna say." And I go, "No, I'm out." They go, "What do you mean you're out?" I said, "I got into radio to express and to share music with people and do my thing, and if I can't do that, I'm out."
Right.
And they said to me, "Well, all right, we'll let you do that, but it's going to be 2 hours in the middle of the night on the weekend." I don't care. I'll do it, because that's all that mattered to me. So exactly. If you can set that precedent from the get-go, it's probably the most important decision I made in my career, to carve out something that's truly you. And that's the same thing for you as a songwriter. I mean, that is imperative to be able to have that sort of expression. Are you one of these guys when you write, and I don't know if this record was different than past records, but are you a guy that like wakes up in the middle of the night and grabs the phone and the voice notes and something came to you in your sleep? And is it always happening, or do you have to sit down and focus on it?
No, it's always happening. Waking up 3 a.m, 5 a.m. Yeah. And I learned early in to keep it was a tape recorder back in the day.
Right.
Now it's a phone, right? And have a guitar in the room, or, you know, a Fender Rhodes, or, you know, something where I can play keyboards in the room. And I try to get, you know, as much of it down as I can, so that when I wake up again in the morning, I've got a good representation. And then I go into the studio and I, you know, pick it apart and figure it out and start putting it together.
How does the Bahamas play into the music you make now? Because you've become kind of a spokesperson for the Bahamas. You're in the commercials and all of that. You live there. I believe this record was recorded there.
Yeah.
Your studio is there. What is that environment? Does that environment influence at all the music you make?
You know, I can make music anywhere, and it's the music that's inside of me. You know, it's not like, some people say, "Oh, if you want to make a heavy record or with a lot of energy, you got to go to a city. Or you want to make a mellow record, you go to the country." No, for me, it can be anything, anywhere. But the Bahamas is, you know, where my grandfather's from, and where my family is from. I grew up there, you know, as a kid. I lived in New York, but we'd go down, you know, 2-3 times a year. I'd spend summers there, and it's just a place where I can be myself. I'm a local. It's chill. The most beautiful water, nature. And it's just conducive to having your feet on the ground, you know, and being in a place where you can actually hear that music that I say is floating around me, right? It's just really clear there. Clear reception. That's a good way to put it. You know, for the antenna. It's just a clear reception, and it's a place where I can do my thing. And the studio is so great. I've made, you know, I guess 4 albums there now. And I want to let people, you know, come down and use the studio and get other energy in there. It's such a great place to make music.
Are there any other rock musicians that live there? You know, I know one does because I just talked to him, and that's Steve Harris of Iron Maiden.
He lives
in
there?
The Bahamas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't know if you've ever seen him around, but he's there.
I don't know. Maybe he's probably in Nassau, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, no, he's there. And mm-hmm. Are there any other musicians
no.
in there that you no. see or there's hang
local,
with at all?
There's really cool local musicians, and right. but none like on the level that we're talking about right now that I know of, no.
Right, right. Speaking of the record, again, the record is coming out on May 24th, mm-hmm. and it's called Blue Electric Light, the 12th album from Lenny Kravitz. So the opening track is a total Lenny title. Mm. It's just another fine day in the universe of love, which right. is just so killer. But what I loved about it is it's the opening song on the record, and it clocks in at over 6 minutes, and it's got some real tasty guitar stuff going on and just a really cool vibe and table setter for the rest of the record. Tell me about that track and how it became the opening track on the record.
Well, that actually was the first track that that happened for the record. And this was that aha moment. Like, you know, we were working on this track, and Craig and I are in the studio, and it's like, we think we have something. Like, something's happening. And cut the track, had no lyrics or melody, and I put on my headphones, and I have this big field on my property, and I just would put the music on and run around this field and just run and run and listen. And that went on for a couple of days, and then finally I heard the melody and the words. It just came, and went and recorded it, and it was the beginning of this record. And we knew it, like, okay, here we go, we have a direction. Although that direction goes in many different ways, but we have a direction. We have something that's giving us our start. And so I put it first. I just thought it felt like, you know, the opening. And I love that track. I love that track so much. The juxtaposition of, like you said, these guitar licks and this funky bass, and then you've got this 808 drum machine going. It's really, really tasty for me.
And, you know, I loved, I even sent you a text about it, because when I heard TK421, it blew me away, because it's so funky and it's just such a killer riff and groove, and you can't help yourself but to bop along when you hear that song, man. And it was the lead track, of course. It came out a little while ago, mm-hmm. along with the video and all of that.
What video? What video?
Video where you run around half naked, man. What are you doing? Before I get to the music, this is a serious question, because you and I are the same age. How the hell do you stay in the shape you're in? I mean, I'm not even joking with this. I mean, have you ever eaten a bowl of pasta? Have you ever eaten a loaf of bread? It's, like, what do you do, man? Just, What's your regimen?
It's just when and how often. No, I like to train. You know, I've been training with this brother of mine named Dodd Romero for years and years. But last summer I took it to another level. I know something snapped in me, and I got into this just place in my mind where I wanted to be at my best. And so according to him, I'm training now as an elite athlete, which cracks me up, because that was never my thing. Like in high school, I wasn't like the sporty gym guy, you know. I was playing music, you know. And but I really like it, and it's great for the mind. It's really great for the mind, because the level of discipline that you have to get to, you can apply that same discipline into so many areas of your life. And anyway, so I feel good, and you know, you want to come work out with us, just let me know. And
I told you last time you're on, I want to come ride the horse with you on the beach,
there
like
you go.
Do in the commercial, and let's then we'll go
it.
Work out, and that's
let's
it. I'll look like you the next day.
And then we'll listen to some old Kiss records.
Oh, man. What's your favorite Kiss studio record, since you brought that up? This is always a debate with my friends who are Kiss fans. I got one right off the top of my head, but I'm curious.
You mean like album?
The album, studio album.
Wow,
yeah.
The sound of the studio. Wow, that's a hard one, but oof. That's a hard one. Studio album. I'd say Dress to Kill.
Yeah, that's great songs on Dress to Kill.
I love the sound of the recordings as well.
Rock and Roll Over.
Rock and Roll Over.
So raw.
Exactly. Raw, but it's just really tight. Those are my two favorite as the studio record. And I know we should be saying like Dress to Kill, which is...
Or Destroyer
Sorry. Destroyer, that's what I meant. Yeah. Destroyer, which is great. But I like the other two better.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want to go where you're promoting your record. We'll save this for another time because this could turn into hours. But we'll get back to your record right now.
You and I could do like a weekend. You know,
we should.
Yeah,
I want to come to the Bahamas and just have a drink and talk about this stuff.
There
man.
You go. We'll do like
and we'll roll some tape.
I'm down.
All right, we'll make a plan to do that. Going back to your record, though, before we go down a Kiss rabbit hole. So TK421,
right.
and the story on that, because there was much made of the title, but it's,
right.
correct me if I'm wrong, it's loose, it's connected to something from Star Wars, right?
Well, yeah, originally Star Wars, but then Paul Thomas Anderson used that reference, I guess, as a shout out to Lucas in Boogie Nights.
In Boogie Nights.
So I don't know if you remember, there's the character that Don Cheadle plays.
Yes, of course.
And when he's not making pornos, he's working in the stereo shop, right? And that guy walks in and he's trying to sell him this stereo. And he's like, yeah, the stereo is great. But if you really wanted to rock and have more bass and do all that, you got to get the TK421 modification, which we do in the back. So that became sort of a running joke in my studio between myself and... my technician, Alex Alvarez, who fixes all the gear and keeps it all together, because there is a door to the back of the studio where all this is happening. And whenever I would ask him a question as to, like, where is this piece of gear? He's like, well, I'm doing the TK421 modification to it right now. And, you know, but that doesn't concern you, because Don Cheadle also tells the guy, it doesn't concern you what we do in the back. So somehow when I started writing this song, I don't know. I took TK421 as this sort of metaphor for making something better, making it more powerful, more beautiful, more incredible. And so that's how I used the phrase TK421. You know, we're going to make it all better.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to go too deep into the new record because it's not out for a couple more months after people hear this. They can pre-order it now, but we'll do more on it when people actually have the record.
You can go as deep as you want. Go ahead.
But I'm saying, I mean, as far as people don't know these tracks we're talking about besides TK421 yet, because the record's not out. So we can do a lot more when the record's actually out, when people have heard these songs. Mm. But there are two other ones on the record that I did want to ask you about. And the one, and you probably got me pegged for this right off the bat because I love the guitar-driven stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard Paralyzed, I was all in.
Oh, yeah.
I love that track. And tell me about the origins of that.
So that, as we spoke about earlier, most of the songs come to me in these dreams. And this song came from a jam session. So I just felt like I wanted to play. So I said, Craig, let's just go jam. You pick up the guitar, I'll go behind the drums, and let's just see what happens. And we don't speak about it. We just sit down, we look at each other, and we just start playing. And we found these parts, and then I, you know, okay, now I need a bridge, I need this, I need that, or the change. So I worked on that. We got all the parts together, and then we cut it. Guitar and drums, one take, done. And then I went in the studio, played the bass, played my guitar parts, and then put the talk box solo on, which I did last. And then put the vocals on. And it was a needed track for the record, you know, that direction. And I love the blend of the guitars. Also with the synthesizers, it has a little bit of that 80s kind of rock MTV thing happening, mm-hmm. where you have a blend of you know, distorted electric guitars and synthesizers as well. And it's got a vibe. It's sexy.
I love it, man. It was, and I'm curious, do you, and I know you love a wide net of music, producing, writing your own records, have a wide net of music on them. And again, I really appreciate that about what you do. But when you hear, I hear a song like Paralyzed, and I think, Are You Gonna Go My Way, Fly Away, among your biggest songs, very, very guitar riff, guitar driven songs. Do you ever see yourself, or do you ever feel like at some point in your career you might want to make a total top-to-bottom heavy guitar record? I mean, in your catalog, Circus maybe comes to mind as the closest to that. Right. But do you ever feel like that's something you'd like to do, like make an all-out hard rock record? We even touched on, you know, you're a big Kiss fan. I am as well. Would you ever like to do something like that? Or does it just have to come to you at that time?
No, I'm actually working on it.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because you're right. Normally I drift, like any one style. I can't stay on it, you know? I move around. I like the record to have different flavors and all. But I thought, you know what? It's time for just a straight up rock record. You know, like 10 songs and just stay there, you know? And so I'm working on it. Yeah, absolutely.
How far along are you on that?
Like 6 tracks. Yeah.
So that might be the record that comes after this one?
Maybe. There's a few. There's a couple. During the pandemic, I made 3 to 4 records worth of music. So we'll see what comes when and for what, you know? But yes, there will be a straight up guitar record.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, again, I love everything you do, but
I
love your guitar playing. I love Craig's guitar playing, and I love your vocal on top of it.
Thank you.
And the idea of making a record like that, just the way your records sound, so organic. I mean, a big old school heavy riff rock record. I am geeked up, right? You can hear already I'm geeked up, man.
I got you, Eddie.
And one other track to ask you about the new record, and that's Human, which is a single from the record. Tell me about that one.
That's just a really uplifting celebration. It's happy. It's about being human, you know, us being spiritual beings in this human existence, and us walking into our authenticity, you know, being as authentic as we can to what's inside of us, and celebrating our humanity. And that's the theme of the track. And the sound of it is it's fun, it's light, it's uplifting, and it makes me smile.
You talked about playing live, and that is where you really excel, and I know you've got dates outside of America right now. I just saw you do that medley on, I think it was the People's Choice, which was killer. You now have a great problem, because with this being your 12th album and so many great songs across your catalog, how do you formulate the set list? You probably have 5-6 songs you got to do every night, every show.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, like, what do you do? Cause you want to represent the new record. So how do you do that? Do you change it night to night, or do you just lock in on something?
Yeah, you sound just that. What you just said is what I've been saying the last couple weeks. I got to play these. I got to represent the new record. I got, you know, it true. And, I'm sure there'll be 3 or 4 songs that can swap that may be in the same sort of, vibe, you know. You know, you could do Sister one night, you could do Believe one night, you know, they're both kind of, you know, these sort of ballads that have guitar solos and whatnot. So there's different things that you could swap out, which I'll do. But I'm definitely going to represent, this record, you know, play maybe, you know, 4 tracks from this record. And I also want to go deeper into the album cuts, you know, stuff that fans, you know, that I know that want to hear, you know, and that either we don't play much or have never played. Yeah.
Well, and you have U.S. dates coming. They're not announced at the time we're doing this, but there's going to be a U.S. run.
We'll be on the road for a couple of years, so we'll definitely be coming through, and we'll represent.
Quick things, because I'll let you go. You played everything on this record, and you do that on a lot of your records with Craig.
Yeah, and then Craig on certain tracks. Yeah.
And you mentioned your favorite place to be is in the studio and all of that. Mm-hmm. But among the instruments you play, what's your favorite thing to play?
Probably drums. Probably drums, just because it's all 4 limbs and it's just so physical. And I mean, I love them all, as you say, but I love playing the drums. It's fun. That's, you always feel like a, you know, a 5-year-old banging on pots and pans, you know?
It's funny you say that, because I have a couple friends or artists, and some that are friends, that are, that do records where they play everything themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Wolfgang Van Halen about this.
I just met him in L.A., and we talked about, you know, getting in the studio. He seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, he's awesome. Extraordinary musician, Richie Kotzen, that I'm good friends with. Mm-hmm. He does everything on his records. And they're both amazing guitar players, and they both cited drums as well,
mm-hmm,
as their favorite thing to do. Wolf said it. Richie has said it in the past. So it's interesting that these guys like yourself that can go in and play everything, that at the end of the day, they love playing the drums. They just love hitting something,
yeah,
I guess.
You know, it's primal.
Yeah, it really is interesting. All right, last thing. 12 records. Somebody listening to this right now, they've never heard of Lenny Kravitz. They don't know anything about your 12 records. They don't know anything about your songs. What record are you telling them to get? What record in your catalog are you saying this is what you should start with?
Oh, God.
Not counting the new one, because, of
right,
course, I know we got to sell the new one.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Where are they starting?
One? Oh, yeah, pick one.
What? You know, it's the old school days. They're not going to click on their phone in here. They're going to go to a record store, plunk down $15, the way it should be, and actually listen and go through the record. What's the record they're getting?
Mama Said.
Mama Said?
Yeah.
Why?
It just, it's where, I don't know, it just, something about that record I love. Obviously, Are You Gonna Go My Way was probably what I was gonna say, but both of those records have a similar quality. They're sonically different, but they both have like really great rock and roll, soul, R&B, funk, ballads. But there's something about Mama Said. I think it's really, I don't know. It represents me. I'd start there.
All right. Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
Mama Said's the one to start with.
Yeah.
Well, always great to visit with Lenny, and I could talk to that guy for hours. We'll hopefully do more with him closer to the release of his album. 2 singles out from it right now. Let's get you another interview this week. Chris Jericho, best known from the wrestling world, but has really carved out a nice career with his rock band Fozzy, and also a band he has on the side covering obscure 80s Kiss songs called Quarantine. We'll cover all of that and more with Jericho right now. Enjoy. Quarantine back in action. It was Gene's turn this time to go with an album track, and you went with a deep cut from Crazy Nights. When you and PJ were on last time talking Quarantine and 80s Kiss, you teased what the next one was going to be. And I remember I threw out a couple that I suspected, but they were not, it didn't end up being what I thought. How did you arrive on Good Girl Gone Bad?
Well, anybody that's still not familiar with Quarantine is, we do all non-makeup 80s Kiss. And we started with a Gene, went to a Paul, and we kind of flip-flopped back and forth. So the last one we did was Silver Spoon off of Hot in the Shade. So it was Gene's turn. And there's, I've kind of become reacquainted with Gene's 80s material, and Good Girl Gone Bad was the one that stood out, because it's a really catchy, hooky tune that was actually even considered to be a single when Crazy Nights came out. And I think it was mixed by, you know, by management or Paul or whoever it was, but it was such a cool tune that we thought, like, listen, it fits the vibe of what we do, of kind of bringing these gems out into the spotlight, no pun intended, and putting some emphasis on them to where people can check them out and dig them if they're Kiss fans, or if they're not Kiss fans. It's almost like we're pulling the Lars and early Metallica when they played the Diamond Head tunes and people thought they were really their tunes. So there's a lot of people that think Quarantine is Jericho's other band with all these original tunes. But obviously, like you said, it's a Gene tune. We sped it up just a little bit to give it a little bit more punch. But yeah, it turned out great. And then the best part is, like, we released these songs to radio now, and it was the number one most added song on 2 separate radio networks. So these songs do have some legs, and they do have some pull, even in 2024.
I told you, you and I told the audience, you and I spoke on the phone last week, and I was saying, when we were talking about this, and I said, you've built a cottage industry here of taking obscure album tracks, and to people who aren't hardcore Kiss fans, I mean, me and you hear the song, we know immediately what it is, but to the general public, they'd have no idea. They'd just think, oh, that's a new song by a band called Quarantine. And you're right, Metallica, I mean, look, Metallica was super transparent that they were covers because, you know, they talked about them being covers and they were all on covers albums. But still, right. there's tons of people that think these Diamond Head songs and these Budgie songs that Metallica covered are actually Metallica songs. People think Whiskey in a Jar is a Metallica song.
Right,
and it's brought all new, you know, it's a win-win in a way, because in the case of Metallica, they're doing covers of obscure bands that really never made it and had no money. So like the guys like Brian Tatler and Diamond Head has said that by Metallica covering Am I Evil, it put his kids through college and bought them a house because they wrote the song. Gene's okay financially. I don't think he needs your help in that area. But
the thing that's cool though is you know, both Gene and Paul appreciate when we do these tunes. Like I wouldn't send, you know, the Gene song to Paul or the Paul song to Gene, but I do send them out, and Gene loved it. He loved the tune. I think it, our version of his tune, and you know, Bruce Kulick of course loves all of them because that's, as he's very proud to fly the flag for his era, as he says. So you're right. I mean, this is a whole, and we've talked about this so many times, Eddie. This is how I got into Kiss. So Heaven's on Fire was the first Kiss song that I ever really heard, and et cetera, et cetera. And they didn't really focus on this era, and they really couldn't. I mean, they played Heaven's on Fire, and once in a while they throw in Hide Your Heart and obviously Lick It Up. But that's about it. They have so many other tunes that people want to hear. So there is a whole kind of stage of Kiss's career that never gets any type of airplay or any type of, especially now Kiss is done anyways, but you know, for us to be able to do these songs and play, you know, the shows that we're able to play, it's really kind of a tribute to this lost era of Kiss. But like you said, it's also songs that people don't really know that they equate with Quarantine, which, like you mentioned, it's a win-win for everybody.
Well, the thing about it is, Kiss is for the most part buried and dismissed this part of their history. I mean, the entire thing is built on the makeup era and the 70s era and all of that. That being said, yes, for somebody who's younger than I, it could be their era that they got into the band. And for somebody like me who got into the band in 76, but stuck with them the whole time, I know every one of these songs and records inside out. And, but the band is pretty dismissive of it for the most part outside of a song or two. And by the band, I mean Gene and Paul. So I would not, now you tell me, if you go and bring these songs, like when you make them to the Paul songs to Paul, the Gene songs to Gene, how much do they even still remember them? Because I've spent time with these guys when I used to talk to them, and I brought up these songs, and they're like vaguely even trying to remember, like they look kind of puzzled, like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that. So in some ways, you're probably almost refreshing their memories as that some of these songs were really good.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, when I asked them about this stuff, I mean, Paul remembers a lot about tracking the vocals and that sort of a thing. Like a song like My Way, we've discussed quite a bit. That's kind of the peak of Paul's vocal power, also in the Crazy Nights record, and talks about how it was effortless for him at that point in time. But yeah, I mean, Good Girl Gone Bad, you know, I know for Fozzy, I mean, there's songs, you know, that we don't play live on records that I don't even remember, or don't even know which ones they are. And we have 8 albums, never mind Kiss with, you know, 25 odd albums or whatever it is. And Gene with all the songs he's written, you know, he did a whole box set of unreleased tunes. So I bet you when I send him, you know, Good Girl Gone Bad, it probably is a memory refresher of like, man, that's a pretty cool tune. And it gives it second life. Like we talked about before, we laughed about how No, No, No was the highest charting song off the Crazy Nights record ever. It beat Reason to Live and Crazy Nights from 1987 when it hit like number 21 in 2021 or whatever it was. So I think it's cool for them to probably hear these songs again, but also that, you know, it goes to rock radio, it hits the top 20, maybe this one will hit the top 10, And it's kind of like, it's a bonus. Like you mentioned, it's not about the money. I think it's just a bonus kind of showing their influence and their status as songwriters that they still hold up, you know, dude, almost 40 years later. That's pretty crazy to be able to do that.
So you mentioned No No No, which you also did previously with Quarantine, which was right. Is also from the same record, Crazy Nights. Are you a big Crazy Nights fan? Would you consider that to be one of your favorite records of this era?
I mean, I like them all. I think they all have merit, and I think Revenge or Crazy Nights might be my favorite out of them. But it's not like we picked that song because, okay, it's a Crazy Nights song. We've got kind of a list of songs. We have kind of a vague rule book in Quarantine that none of the songs could have videos for them. So they're not singles, so to speak, right? But it's not like we sat down and said, okay, we love Crazy Nights so much, let's do another Crazy Nights tune, because we've done two from Crazy Nights now, one from Asylum, one from Revenge, and one from Hot in the Shade. So, you know, it's kind of spread out throughout that catalog because there's gems on every one of those albums. All of them have great songs. It's like an unlimited well of tunes that we can do, considering we put out a song once a year or once every 18 months. I mean, man, there's so many songs from this era that we can continue to play, and the band continues to grow, which is great. So there's no reason for us not to continue to do this. And when we get a chance, because obviously it's kind of a super group in some ways. In that, you know, Kent Slusher is playing stadiums with Luke Bryan. He's the hardest guy to pin down besides me. You know, PJ's in Fozzy, PJ's in Twister. You know, Joe McGinnis is a very accomplished country artist, especially in upstate New York. He's got a great following. And then Charlie Parra is one of the biggest YouTube guitar players in South America from Peru, with a million followers on his YouTube channel. So we have all these great players. So when we can get together and play, it's always special, especially when we have these, you know, obscure tunes that are now our songs by proxy almost.
Yeah. And production wise, you know, one of the things I always loved about this song was the late great Eric Carr's drum pocket. I love the way he lays down the drums in this song and drives the song the whole way. And of course, Crazy Nights was the one record that Kiss had produced by Ron Nevison, who was like the red hot guy at the time. I'm curious, have you ever, do you know Nevison? Have you ever thought of sending something like this to him to listen to?
I don't, and we haven't, but I'm sure the word gets around at some point. But it's funny because if you listen to most Kiss interviews, especially when it deals with anything in the 80s, including Elder and Unmasked, they always say the demo is so much heavier. Yeah, the demo is so much heavier. So if we do these tunes, you know, you take out kind of the Ron Nevison polish, take out the keyboards, and just kind of amp up the actual quote-unquote heaviness, because that's what the original demos were, according to what they say. So if you're talking about a song like We Could Do My Way, even though it's so high, but just pretend we did it. You take out those keyboards, that thing's based around a keyboard riff, and you just put in heavy guitars instead, and it's going to sound contemporary. That's the beauty of it. So you know, like you mentioned, Ron Nevison producing Crazy Nights, super polished like most albums in 87 were, but we can play with it a bit, like you said, speed up the tempo a bit, put some extra guitars on it, do some guitar dueling because we've got two great guitar soloists in the band. So we can add our own spin to it, so it's not just a complete 100% copy of what Kiss did, but kind of taking it and giving it the Quarantine spin for the modern era.
Yeah, the other thing about this specific song and really Crazy Nights album is Bruce's lead guitar playing on this song is so tasty. It's so great. And it just got such a great sound and vibe to it. And I know you and I, of course, are both friends with Bruce, and Bruce is, unlike Gene and Paul, Bruce is like really connected to this stuff. And as you said before, really the one guy waving the flag for it on all of that. So I know he made a nice post about it and thought it was real good as well.
Yeah, and once again, you know, I know people want to fight with me about it, but for me, Bruce is the best guitar player in Kiss history. And I think, once again, you know, the fact that he wasn't at the Madison Square Garden final show and that sort of thing, I think it kind of bugs him, and as it should. But,
sure,
you know, we're kind of carrying that flag. So these Bruce Kulick tunes, you know, aren't forgotten. And that's the thing too. Like Bruce does such a great job with his band with, you know, with Brent Fitz and Zach Throne and Todd Kearns and that sort of a thing. But we can still do it on our side too, because we've got two guitar players that both play lead, and we've got a lead singer with no guitar holding me back to do all the stuff that we can do. So we're two separate bands, celebrating this forgotten era, like you said, and essentially celebrating the body of work that Bruce Kulick left behind as well.
Yeah, I mean, and one other thing on the production on Crazy Nights, it's interesting because Nevison, for people that don't know, Ron Nevison came out of the 70s and produced everything from, you know, or engineered everything from like early Bad Company records to just amazing stuff. Did, you know, maybe my favorite record of all time, UFO Strangers in the Night, and other UFO records. He engineered Zeppelin stuff. He worked on The Who. I mean, and then in the 80s, Nevison became like the guy that 70s bands kind of went to get them back on the radio and make them sound contemporary at that time. Best known, it all started with Heart and that record with What About Love, where Nevison sourced the outside writers and ended up bringing Heart back hugely. And once he did, then Ozzy and Kiss and all these others wanted a spin at him to do the same thing. But what I find interesting about that is the way Ron did that was by, as we talked about, polishing it up, making it pretty commercial, adding keyboards and all of that. So it was mission accomplished then, but then you flash forward 30, 40 years, and all these artists want to remix the records that Nevison made and take away some of that stuff and beef it up. I've heard Ozzy talk about wanting to remix Ultimate Sin and pull off some of the keys and stuff, which is why that record was successful in 86 or whatever, but doesn't age as well now. So it's kind of interesting, like tying in with what you said about Crazy Nights. If you go to My Way or some of this stuff and you pull those keys out and you beef up the guitars, it's a lot more Kiss sounding, metal sounding stuff.
Well, yeah, and by proxy, much more modern sounding. You know, that's kind of what our mission is to take these, like you said, these great tunes from another era, and record them for the modern era, so that people can hear them on the radio and go, these songs are great. And once again, there was a certain way of doing things in the 70s, a certain way of doing things in the 80s, and there's a certain way of doing it now. You know, you get the right mix on it, it sounds heavy, you know, super fucking heavy. And that's kind of the whole idea behind it. Like when you hear, like, you know, Good Girl Gone Bad on the radio, like it fits right in with anything you're going to hear from, you know, Papa Roach or Foo Fighters or Green Day or, you know, whoever's on the radio now. And that's kind of the idea, which makes me laugh, where it's like this, once again, this, you know, B-side from Crazy Nights Kiss record, which is, you know, a lot of people consider to be a B record in the Kiss catalog, is now getting, you know, the most added spins on modern rock radio. And to me, that's the fun of it. Like, come on. Like, if you said that, like, really? Like, how did that happen? And it's like, you know, once again, it started during the lockdown, during the quarantine, get it? And no one was putting out any new music because nobody was really recording. And when we did the first tune, which was No, 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 we were like, well, let's just release it to rock radio and see what happens. There's no new material anyways, so maybe somebody will play it. And they did, like I mentioned, getting to number 24 or whatever the hell it was. But it's still like, that's kind of where the whole idea started. And it was so much fun. It's like, and once again, we have this wealth of material. Why should we stop? Let's do as many songs as we can and do as many shows as we can, knowing that we all have day jobs and other gigs, et cetera, et cetera. But it's one of those things, it's just crazy enough to work. And it's worked, which is really cool. And I think, once again, it's kind of a tribute and a testament to the quality of Kiss's material in the 80s, which a lot of people downplay. Those are some great records and some great songs and some great musicianship, too. Like, we did Love's a Deadly Weapon, and it's so weird. It's like it's almost prog rock at times. And you're like, how did this even happen? Like, why was Gene doing a 7-8, you know, rhythm part? And didn't even realize that he was, you know. And it's just kind of like you sing these songs and learn them, and you realize they're a lot harder than you thought they were. And there's a lot of fun trying to figure that out too, and realizing that like you mentioned, Eric Carr, like, dude, what a monster drummer in the studio. That guy was playing some crazy stuff that you would never even realize until you try and play it.
Do you think that in some way you doing this has given Gene and Paul more appreciation for these songs in this era?
I mean, I don't know how much they pay attention to it. Like I said, I sent Paul Silver Spoon. I sent him Heart of Chrome. I sent Gene the three tunes we did of his. And I think they appreciate it and kind of think, yeah, that's pretty cool. I would have to think that if nothing else, they probably think that it's cool or at least interesting, intriguing, trying to think like Paul, that we're doing this and having success with it. You know, this is not a Kiss cover band that you see in the most part with makeup and playing Shout Out Loud and Love Gun. It's like we're going on stage and doing, you know, the X and Sex and All Hell's Breaking Loose. And it's kind of like, really? Like, those are the tunes you're doing? But when you sell them and when you play them properly, like we said, a good song is a good song. It doesn't matter if you know it or not. It's just cool and it works. So I would think if they follow anything that we've been doing, and I bet you Gene might more than Paul does because Gene's pretty astute when it comes to anything Kiss-related. I think that they probably have a little bit of good for those guys type of a vibe because, once again, you know, we're keeping these songs alive or reintroducing them to a whole new generation of people, and that's just good for their business, for their legacy.
So I'm going to give you a super, super geeky fun fact about Good Girl Gone Bad, which you may or may not know, but I knew because when this record came out, I was working in the music industry. I was working for a label as well as doing radio. I went to the listening party for Crazy Nights. There's a whole story there I could tell, but there is a co-writer on Good Girl Gone Bad whose name is Davitt Sigerson.
Right.
Did you know that?
Well, the only reason I know it is because I looked it up.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Here's the part, though. He was the president of Kiss's record label at the time.
Wow. Really?
So the co-writer of the song actually was running PolyGram Records at the time or right around the time. That's how fucking geeky I am that when this thing came out, of course, I read every credit and then I see this name that I never heard of before and I'm like, oh, I need to find out who that is. And then the next thing you know, I'm reading Billboard, Davitt Sigerson is the president of PolyGram Records now. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's the guy that wrote Good Girl Gone Bad. It's just like, so how often is it that the guy that puts out, like the guy heading the company or working for the record label has a co-write on a Kiss record with Gene? Right. I'm looking his name up because I knew him casually back then. I'm looking his name up on the Wikipedia right now. Davitt Sigerson is an American novelist whose first career was in the music business, record producer, singer, songwriter, record company executive, and journalist. He wrote the song Good Girl Gone Bad on the 1987 album Crazy Nights, and in addition has worked with Olivia Newton-John, The Bangles, Tori Amos, and more.
And wrote songs for or with Philip Bailey, Loverboy, Prism, John Entwistle, and Gene Simmons.
Yeah, yeah. And it says he became president of Polydor, which was a subsidiary of this, in 91. Of course, that's after this, but I recall he may have been around at the time of Crazy Nights as well. Maybe not president, but highly placed in that world. So, yeah, there is your, if you want to get like ridiculously geeky, there is your ridiculously geeky fun fact about this track.
Yeah, it works perfectly because the whole concept of quarantine is geeky Kiss fans. It's perfect.
So you're going to do some live shows again, right? You got a handful of live dates?
Yeah, it seems like we always do the Jericho Cruise, which is it's a lot of fun. And we try and do, you know, a few weekends here and there when the guys are available. And so we got a great little window here, July 5th, 6th, and 7th. And we're going to be playing just outside of Detroit. And I think JD Legends in Franklin, Ohio. And we're playing Jurgles in just outside of Pittsburgh. So it's kind of prime Kiss country to go and do these gigs. And we played last year and did a pretty good little number. So it's a lot of fun, like I said, to get out there and see people actually showing up to see us play these tunes. Makes it even more fun.
So the dates are July 5th at Diesel in Chesterfield, Mass. I was actually there like a year ago. I know the guy that owns the place. It's a great venue. And yeah. July 6th, as you mentioned, JD Legends, that's in Franklin, Ohio. And then July 7th, just three dates right now, as you mentioned, Jurgles, Warrendale, PA. That's for Quarantine. That's the 80s Kiss tribute that Jericho does. Not Fozzy, although there is some crossover, like PJ's in both bands, right?
Yeah, PJ's in both bands for sure, yeah. That's actually got into Fozzy. We had him in Quarantine first, and I was like, this guy's really good. We need a bass player. Let me call Rich Ward.
So you needed to make sure that PJ was as geeky into 80s Kiss as you before he passed the test.
Yeah.
He had to be hazed to get into Fozzy.
Yeah, and he was on the Revenge Tour with Trickster, so...
Oh, that's big cred.
That's some street cred from that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What else you got going on, man? Obviously, you're still doing the wrestling stuff, AEW and all that, and then what do you got coming? Cruises and Fozzy stuff and all that? What's happening?
We just finished the cruise. We got the sixth one next January. We're coming up for the 25th year anniversary of Fozzy, if you can believe that, which is a whole other conversation we can have.
Jesus.
Time. So that's where we're going to be touring on that. Our song Spotlight is top 10 right now on Billboard, Media Base, and number one on SMR for 7 weeks in a row. So that's been doing great for us too. So lots of cool stuff going on, man.
Do you, who owns the first Fozzy record? The very, very first one. Do you have control of that or no?
I don't know, because obviously that was on Megaforce. So I'm not sure who has the exact ownership of that at this point.
Is it still available?
It's on Spotify, so it's available that way. So I would assume.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah, because I know, I mean, obviously with Johnny and Marcia passing away, I just didn't know. I know that Missy controls some of that stuff. I just didn't know if that was under her banner or not.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll have to ask you. It's been 20 years, so I think at some point the masters revert back to somebody, so I'll check it out.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, you know, I love what you do. I love, you know, that you do this. I think it's great. I'm, you know, being into, people always have me mislabeled as the original lineup only guy, which is couldn't be further from the truth. I love that era, but of course I love this era as well and was into it the whole way through. So I think more than anything for me, I think it's great that you shine a light on this stuff to some degree. And also the other thing, the last thing is that I was thinking, there's also a narrative when people talk about the no makeup era of Kiss that all the Gene stuff sucked and that Gene was completely disconnected. And we all know that Gene was doing other things, but I've never entirely believed that. I do believe that Paul kept the thing afloat, but I also do think, and when you listen to a song like Good Girl Gone Bad, it supports it, that Gene actually did have some really good moments during that time. Chris, you there?
That's another thing I love about the quarantine is rediscovering, like you said, the Gene work as well. So, yeah, man. So it's like I said, it's a cool tribute all across the board, and we're excited to be doing it. We'll continue to release these tunes as long as we can continue to play.
All right. So, Paul, there's a Paul track up next. Do you want to point to an album? Do you have it in mind? Do you know what it's going to be?
We're not there yet. We just had Good Girl come out, so we got a couple ideas, but we'll, you know, I'll let you know when we get there.
Or you could throw a real curveball and do an Eric Carr track and do Little Caesar, or a Bruce Kulick track and do I Walk Alone.
That'd be the ultimate feat.
Cool. All right, man. Listen. Talk to you soon, man. I'll talk to you. Thanks. All right.
Bye.
Always great to visit with my old friend Chris Jericho, and big thanks to Lenny Kravitz as well joining us this week on the podcast. Again, if you listen to the radio show live every day, you would have heard those interviews, and you can also interact with me that way. You only get a tiny sample here on the podcast. Hope you come on board and join me if you aren't already. For Trunk Nation, Monday through Friday, starting at 3 Eastern, Faction Talk 103, or anytime live or on demand on the SiriusXM app. Can't listen to 3 Eastern live? No problem. Pull up the show, listen anytime you want on the app. You'll find everything at SiriusXM.com/TrunkNation. Be sure to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, or X as it's now known, Instagram, or the Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe and listen every Thursday, and hope to catch you on the radio Monday through Friday on 103 on SiriusXM, again, starting at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific. Have a great week.